Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend. I'm joined by a plethora of friends from all over the country. We are doing a live podcast from our Snow Goose Culinary Camp in Missouri. I guess we're like Northwest Missouri. So we have been here for the last 3 days, roughly 3 to 4 days, I've had a good time. I don't know if everybody else has, but no. We'll give everybody, all the camp participants are kind of at the table here. The majority of them are here at the table, so they'll share their thoughts and opinions and ideas and critiques as they see fit. And then I just kind of wanted to talk through the camp because we never really talked about this camp. We talked about it initially on the podcast that we were having it, but we didn't go into detail sort of like the why behind, as we have with like other podcasts with our other camps, like the pig camp. We did like a waterfowl one, which we ended up having to cancel. But we are here now in February. Which is awesome. So it's pretty unique to be able to hunt snow geese here. So where we're at is like the place when you Google snow geese and you see the picture of like all the billions of birds flying. Literally, I guess 1 million is the count most recently. Those are where the pictures are taken, which is cool. And I feel like I've seen a million. Do you guys feel like you've seen a million birds this weekend?
At least easily.
Easily, yeah. Maybe not within gun range, but flying about. Just before we came in to sit down and do the podcast, like we're outside and you can hear them like flying over, and it's like 9 o'clock at night, I think. 10:30 at night. Way off. So we chose snow goose too because it kind of falls in line with a very like culinary minded conservation process, I guess. So with wild pigs, like we do down at our camp in Texas, we geared that towards an invasive species and try to, you know, encourage people to eat more wild pig. We show them how great it tastes. We show them how to butcher it and use all the meat in cooking. And for snow geese, they're largely overpopulated. There's been a conservation order in for a long time to try to help to have hunters help reduce the species or reduce the number of those birds. I don't know as to the success of that, but I can tell you I appreciate having a extended waterfowl season and being able to come hunt them. It's always been kind of a dream for me, so I've been out hunting with everybody too in the blinds in the afternoons, not the mornings. Important work goes on in the morning. It's been fun. I would say it's different than I thought it was going to be coming into it. Also, I didn't realize the difference in size between a Canada goose and a snow goose. And I'll let Adam talk about that here in just a minute, but, definitely some size, differences, and that created some challenges for us as a crew, because the way we'd estimated food and things like that as we prepared the meat that we wanted to showcase for everyone. But also to snow geese are, at this point in the year, don't have a lot of fat and their skin's super thin. So instead of being able to pluck them, kind of had we had envisioned, we had skinned them, which worked out well. Got to do a lot of that. I think in total, shot at like more than 50 birds, closer to 60, I think, over the few days. So everybody's going home with some geese. Everybody shot some geese. Everybody shot at some geese. Some people hit geese. Some people didn't. I'm probably more the didn't, but I gave it a good effort. And we did lots of cool things. So I don't know, Adam, any opening thoughts you have?
Hey, Adam here. yeah, it's been a great camp. We went into it not having done a lot of snow goose hunting in the past and not having done any snow goose hunting in Missouri in particular during this time of year. And we're planning, when we were planning the camp, we were thinking, like Justin mentioned, whether we should pluck, whether we should skin. We definitely didn't want to breast the birds, which is the general way people do it. We want to definitely lean away from breasting, and that's the process of just removing the two breasts from the bird and discarding the rest. We wanted to get as much of the bird as possible. Generally, we would add plucking to that, but because of the nature of the skin at this time of year, which is quite thin, being a Canadian millimeter or an American, I don't know, what, like, quite thin, 16th of an inch. Yeah. It was not quite worth it, the time it takes to stop and pluck everything. So, especially when you have 60 birds, we would have been spending a lot of time on that for very little reward. So we ended up doing some skinning instead, which worked out just fine. Justin and I have done a lot of Canada goose hunting in the past. The goose meat being quite similar, but snow geese are actually quite smaller and averaging about 6 pounds per goose, where Canada's can be quite a bit larger. So we struggled with the amount, like figuring out the amount of geese we would need to feed everyone for the weekend, because just like the pig camp, we feed people basically only goose all weekend. And figuring out how much goose per person, how many geese would feed so many people, was a bit of a challenge. But Justin and I arrived early and went on a morning hunt and procured some geese. And our hosts procured some geese for us, which was very kind of them. And we ended up getting just enough, I think, over the weekend. So that was excellent. And we didn't have to steal too many geese from our guests. Yeah. But we ended up eating lots of great goose meals, and we had a lot of fun getting out into the pit blinds. It's the first time I've ever hunted in a pit blind. So basically, there's a concrete long rectangle in a cornfield, and you climb down a set of stairs that are almost like a ship ladder. It's quite steep and narrow. You climb down in there, and there's a raised section where you sit on basically buckets with a small back on them, and there is a kind of wooden frame with chicken wire on top that you fling open to when the geese come in. And that was like a whole new way of hunting that I'd never done before. It was really cool, and we can talk about that a bit more and the challenges of doing that for the first time. So that was one of the highlights for me, was just being able to hunt in one of these big pit blinds that I've always heard about and I never actually got the chance to do. So I think that was a really cool part of that. And then kind of approaching the goose camp like we did the pig camp, and cooking goose the whole time and really dealing with just nothing but goose the whole time. And it worked out great, and I'm really happy with it so far. So
So Adam hit on like a bunch of things that I wanted to talk about too. So it's good that you entered that. So, we took the approach here very similar to pig camp, right? So the objective being everybody in the room here that came, we wanted to walk them through, as close as we could of shooting at geese and then hunting geese, and then butchering geese, and then cooking geese. And largely, would you say we accomplished such mission?
Absolutely.
Nice.
You did a very good job.
Thank you. Thank you. Excellent feedback. We started, what was it, Thursday. We had you guys come in mid-afternoon on Thursday, and we did like our normal welcome briefs. The lodge owner talked a bit, and then we did a kind of shotgun shooting overview for everyone, just to kind of level set where we were. I would say a good mix of experience in shooting throughout, and then connected with a local trap skeet organization here in town, and they opened up their range for us, and we ran everybody through a couple rounds of trap. I always get it mixed up if it's skeet or trap. It's trap. Okay, good. I just use them interchangeably until somebody corrects me. So so everybody ran through that. I don't know. How did you guys feel? Was it helpful, do you think?
I think it was great because, you know, the time of year, it's probably been a while since any of us shot a shotgun. So just getting out there and putting some shells through it, and then for the first-time shooters, just to be able to give them some instruction and guidance on how to hit something that's flying through the air.
Yeah, and it's perfect. I don't know, Kate, you were newer shooter. How did you feel about it in relation to like hunting?
So not a newer shooter, but
hadn't
been shooting in over 10 years and had never been shooting any moving targets with a shotgun. So that was a new experience for me. Let alone hunting with a shotgun. That was actually, I know this is going to sound silly, but one of my favorite parts of the camp, just because it definitely helped me hone my skills in a little bit more of a controlled environment. But it definitely gave me a lot more confidence moving into the hunting portion of the camp.
And then from there, after we did a bit of trap slash skeet slash clays shooting, we came back to the lodge and had a bit of hors d'oeuvres. We talked about kind of goose hunting 101 and just kind of what to expect from the next day when we went out in the blind. And went out I didn't go out the first morning because Adam and I prepped lunch and all that, which we can talk about all the food we had in just a moment, everybody's thoughts on food. Sort of prepared and opened up for the first day, which, you know, the goal, I think, with having everybody go shoot skeet before we ever get anybody into a hunting situation is, one, make sure they're comfortable with firearms, with gun, that they're at a skill level where they can harvest something ethically, and that we're also comfortable with their safety, and they're comfortable with our safety, and their compadres in the pit blind are also comfortable with their safety. So I think with all that out on the table, everybody feels comfortable to say, like, hey, let's go out and let's do some hunting together, which is exactly what we did the next morning, or you guys did the next morning. Ken, would you like to share about the first day hunting recap or a collective group? Riley, you too?
Similar to Adam, for me, it was the first time that I had hunted out of a pit blind, which is something that I've seen time and time again, but an experience that I had never experienced. So it was a fantastic time. Wonderful to experience. Also, just being a waterfowler who's been hunting since just a little guy, it was incredible to see just the massive amount of birds that were out there. Really from start to finish, it was, I was kind of in awe, really.
So this is Ken. I think, again, like, first time in a pit blind, This is actually only the second time I've hunted any kind of bird, and kind of went in with like just kind of like, okay, let's just see what this is all about and see if I can kind of put the mechanics together. So going out, you know, and practicing the day before was important. It was also humbling because it's just like, oh, like here's all the things I don't really know how to do very well. As an adult onset hunter, like I don't have folks around to kind of like mentor me, right, in this. And so it was really great to have folks who were willing to take the time and kind of like show me the ropes and then go out into the blind. And then the first, you know, wave of geese that comes in, you're like, oh wow, this is real. And then what you realize is, you know, geese are just stacked up every couple hundred feet for miles, and in this progression that never really ends. And you know, as the guide is helping to call them in, geese start stacking up and start coming into the blind, and everything is happening, right? So you're trying to figure out the mechanics of how do you get, you know, yourself into a shooting position. How do you get a aim at a very particular goose? And people are shooting around you, and there's a bunch of geese in the sky all at the same time. And that first, you know, time is a little overwhelming. The second time is like better, and like by the third or fourth round of, you know, a bird coming in, you're like, okay, I'm on the same page as everyone else, right? Maybe I'm not, you know, like we're not exactly, you know, like on par, but it's like, okay, like at least we're all doing the same thing here. And then the first time you know that you connected is actually just like, okay, like maybe I can do this. Like, and it felt really good. There's also like really, you know, some dry spells, right, where there's geese aren't, you know, moving right away, and so you get a chance to like talk to other folks and
have snacks.
I mean, it there's so much to say about
you guys, like, were sitting on the other end of the box. You knew, your dad was nice enough to break snacks down, but
yeah, so the role of snacks in the hunting blind cannot be understated. Some people bring quality snacks, and then there's Justin. and so
trail mix is highly sought after.
The thing that we have to talk about is like how the birds just like stacked up in waves, and we had birds, you know, sometimes dozens at a time. There were probably a couple of waves where there was 100, 150 birds that were all coming into the blind. And it's just a little surreal, just kind of like watching that sheer volume of animals in close proximity coming into the blind. And so they're so close, they're actually bumping into each other. As they're kind of like jockeying through the air and losing altitude, you know, from hundreds of feet down to 20, 30 feet away from you. It was really spectacular.
I don't know, how did... So I guess something unique too about snow goose season is that there is... in normal waterfowl hunting, you're restricted to 3 shells. So... 2 in your magazine tube and 1 in the chamber. But with the conservation order for snow geese or light goose, there is no plug required, and you can have as many shells as your gun can hold. So there's like extended magazine tubes and all these things. And I don't know, my shotgun, which is a sweet pump shotgun from the early 2000s, will hold like, I think five in the tube and one in the chamber if the plug's out. I don't know how many. Who has the biggest magazine tube?
Well, I think from what we were using, directly, nine. You could hold nine. I believe that one of the camp guns had a longer tube magazine on it.
Nice. 16. And they're like semi-autos too, so you can just like, you can just let it rip if you have a big flock. Or if you have one and you just feel like overshooting, which is not great because then you later get to pick out all those pellets and the meat. So accuracy's on your side if you want to take home meat. To me it was cool too because I was really still and am still in awe and caught myself at moments just like there's like a ton of birds just like flying around in any given direction at any given time, whether they're coming into the blind or not. There's just like these big swaths of snow geese moving. And you're just like, this is crazy. It's what it reminds me of is like watching old like war movies and you see like all the planes like coming through to go do a giant like bombing run. That's what seeing all those up in the sky reminds me of. And it's just like, whoa, that's wild. Nature.
World War One Red Baron movies.
Yeah. That's what totally makes me think about that. So then really that was the morning of day two. And I think those guys talked about it most. And then once everybody got done, came back, we had lunch ready. What was lunch on the first day?
We did kind of like an Italian-style Chicago beef sandwich, but made with goose breast instead. So like jardinera and peppercini and slow-cooked goose breast on a hoagie roll. And then we had, because it was quite cold, it was a lot colder than everyone expected, so we made... I smoked some of the goose carcasses after butchering them and just made some simple soups over the weekend just to warm people up. So a simple smoked goose and noodle soup just to warm everyone's belly coming in from the cold pit.
What did you guys think of day one food? It's all fair game.
I thought it was great. And all the food that we've had has been really good. And the one thing you'll hear a lot or that people throw around is, oh, snow goose, it's not edible. And this camp has pretty much proved that falsehood.
Yeah, and that's one reason we want everybody to come here, because it is just like wild pig. It is a resource that can be utilized to bring home good quality meat. And I think too, that's another thing with snow goose that we purposely selected as a camp, because there's no daily limit. If it is, it's like super, super high. Here, there's not a daily limit. 20 in the fall. 20 in the fall, but not in the spring conservation. It's open. So you can literally shoot hundreds if you're able to. And then bring that meat home. So what was it? We're talking 6 pounds per bird times 100. That's 600 pounds of total carcass. Well, I guess you would take off feathers and skin, but you're still probably in the, I would say, if you shot 100 geese, you could probably have a fair bit of meat, like usable meat or usable carcass. Yeah, to make whatever you wanted. And two, it's like, I would say flavor profile-wise, I think it's similar. I heard similar to beef. But I think it's still more mild. It's still more in line with goose and waterfowl, just in general. Like it's not. While it is comparable to some other domesticated meats, it's not, because it's its own thing. It tastes like snow goose, which is fine by me. Let's see. Then after lunch, we did a bit of butchering class. So Adam put on a butchering class. You want to talk kind of what you did through the butchering class?
Sure. So I think the first morning we all the hunters out in the pit were getting waves and waves and waves of geese. So they came in right after that with quite a few geese under their belt, which is awesome. And we got to kind of bring them all in and then do a bit of a demonstration on how to break down a goose. And like I said, we didn't do the plucking this time, so I showed a basic demonstration on how to skin the goose. So you basically pop off the two legs, pop off the wingtips with the aid of a boning knife or a fillet knife, and then pull the skin off, remove the head, and then remove the innards, saving the heart, gizzard, and liver, and then saving the carcass as well. After gutting, you basically take off the breast, legs, and wings, and then save the carcass for making stocks or whatever in the neck as well. So got to show everyone how to get the most out of each of their geese, which is cool. And after that, everyone went back hunting again. Everyone went back out of the pit again.
We also did because in the evening on each full day, Friday and Saturday, we divide the groups into two, and they're responsible for cooking dinner that night. And it's in a cooking class format. So going into that, I see the camaraderie of the green team over there, happy about their meal tonight. Orange team represent too. both teams did great. Both meals were good. Really, really good. But we, just like we do in the pit camp, so in the pit camp we give everybody a copy of Jesse Griffith's book, The Hog Book, and here we chose to go with Hank Shaw's book, Duck Duck Goose. And so we spend about an hour-ish going through that and kind of like highlighting some cool techniques, some cooking methods, some nuances of waterfowl with that, and really give everybody kind of a roadmap to use that book when they leave here, in addition to our own recipes, which we kind of keep exclusive to camp attendees. We don't broadcast those recipes out super wide. So come to camp, learn the secret recipes. Then yeah, like Adam said, everybody went back out and hunted again. And I joined them in the evening that time. It was quite lovely. It was cold. It got cold. It was colder in the morning when you guys were out the first day, right? Or was it colder this morning?
It was way colder this morning.
Okay, it was colder this morning. It was still cold yesterday evening. Not as cold as this morning.
It was chilly when Justin was there.
It's my warming personality. Or my hot air. Your choice. I don't know. How did the afternoon, how do you guys feel the afternoon went? I think it was less waves of geese, more singles coming in.
Yeah, there's thousands of birds in the air, but it's still hunting. You know, there's no guarantees. We always came back with birds, but after the first morning, it was a little more challenging getting birds on the ground. But the guides did a great job. They called in. A lot of times it was singles, maybe a few doubles. And then it was up to us to put them on the ground. And we've got a great group of shooters, too. So that wasn't a problem if we could get the birds in.
Yeah, you guys can all hit one bird. It's awesome. Me too, mostly. Sometimes. Then came back and we immediately went into a cooking class. And so... Orange team, do you guys want to talk about what you prepared?
Sure, Justin. This reminds me of when my team put me on the spot and I didn't want to talk about it either.
You did such a great job.
So. Thanks. So we ended up grinding up a lot of the meat ourselves. So we ground up some goose breast with pork shoulder and some bacon, although we had hoped to have pork belly, but there wasn't any local to us, unfortunately. We then, with that ground meat, we reserved some for burgers, which we ate the next day, and then made a rendition on Swedish meatballs. So with that, we served it with a gravy made from goose stock, which was delicious. I might say so, you know, not to puff up my own goose feathers. We did that with some garlic mashed potatoes that also had a little goose stock in there. And then also served it with a little lingonberry jam, which is really traditional to that kind of Swedish preparation, which is kind of, if you've never had it, go buy it at IKEA. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say IKEA. Sure. But it's basically like a more tart version of like cranberry, again, native to Sweden, and it's really delicious, kind of tart and sweet. But so we did that with the meatballs, with the mashed potatoes and this gravy all over. And then we also served it with this really lovely lingonberry cocktail, which was served with a whiskey that was actually distilled just like a few blocks at a farm kind of near the camp and the lodge. So that was pretty cool too.
Let's see. We also did a wine pairing to Pasilaca Winery out in California. They have a really cool Pear Wild program where they take all of their wines and have a recommendation list actually on the back of the bottle to pair with different types of wild fish, game, and forageables. So that was cool. We got some wine from them for that, and I think we did three bottles. We did Chardonnay, a Zinfandel, and a Pinot Noir paired with the Swedish meatballs, and that was really, really good. So the cocktail, too, to like build on that, it was a warm cocktail because I knew everybody would be cold coming in. And so we did like it was a lingonberry syrup that we used with like an apple juice and cardamom and cinnamon and oranges and let it cook kind of all day and then added the whiskey in at the end for those that wanted it. But it was nice, just a nice, warm, refreshing, comfortable cocktail that probably put everybody to sleep shortly after, which is okay. And yeah, that wrapped up day 1.5, we'll call it. And then going into day two, so this morning, very cold. We had a big cold front come through yesterday, and I don't know how much. I don't think it snowed yesterday a full inch. Light dusting.
It started snowing again in the evening though too.
Oh, okay.
So, snow geese in the snow.
Nice. Snow geese in the snow. I like it. Maybe that's the title of the episode.
I thought Green Team would be a better title.
Green Team? Oh. Oh, ouch.
Not a contest, guys.
So, any highlights from this morning that you think was different than yesterday?
Hey, guys, it's Chris. Definitely, I'd say with the cold snap that came through, it made everything a bit more challenging. When there's a bit of frost on the decoys, they just don't look natural compared to, you know, what you would expect to see or what the snow geese expect to see. So I think we ended up with 10 this morning. And considering we're dealing with clear skies, which I personally don't think is great for waterfowl hunting, and the frost, I think we did all right. But certainly the frost made it a challenge, and the snow geese were just flying way higher because there's no clouds. Bringing them down was a bit harder. Besides that, it was a great time.
Nice. Did you guys have snacks this morning too that I missed out on?
No, I don't think there was any snacks.
Oh, you guys had a heater this morning?
First of all, I don't think we talk about snacks that may or may not have happened when Justin was warm and cozy in the lodge and the rest of us. So we do need to talk about exactly like how cold, because it was very, very cold. Right. Some of y'all are from Wisconsin and are used to this thing called, you know, chilly, cold, winter, whatever. Other people are from Arizona, and there's reasons why we live in Arizona and not in Wisconsin. And so, you know, as I'm walking to and from the blind and sitting in the blind for hours, wearing every piece of clothing I own that made this trip, I'm reminded of just like how cold can be. But to echo Chris's point, I think, you know, we made the best of that situation. And there was like great snacks. And we connected on the bird that did show up. And I think the other thing too is just like, we got to in 2 days we saw like the full range of like kind of weather conditions, but also like bird behavior. And it was just like a really well-rounded kind of, you know, experience. I felt like walking away, it's like, okay, you know, like one, want to come back and do this again. But two is just like, all right, I have a really good sense of like what's going on.
Now, let me make this clear. When Ken says the birds that showed up, there was no shortage of birds. The birds were constant, thousands and thousands and thousands. He simply means the birds that decided that the glistening decoys were all right.
Slightly visually impaired birds, maybe?
Yes, yes, possibly.
That's all right. They taste the same.
They do. They do. We do not discriminate.
So then once you guys got done in the morning, you came back to the lodge. And Adam, what was on the menu today?
They all just blend into each other. So I made goose burgers for lunch. So basically I took some of the grind we had done for the meatballs the day before, and I added some. So we basically had bacon, pork fat, pork shoulder, and goose breast. And then today I added more goose legs and goose wings, obviously deboned. And I ground those up with some canned green chilies that I had squeezed kind of dry. And I served it on sesame brioche buns with some cheese and a salsa made from tomatillos with more green chilies. So it was kind of like a, I don't know if a Southwest burger. I'm not from the Southwest, and we have people from the Southwest, so I'm hesitant in saying that. I'm getting a shaky hand, so kind of a Southwest burger, and made with goose. That I just did it on the big like flat top we have here at the lodge that was graciously provided for us, and I think they turned out pretty good.
Super good.
Yeah, super good. That's good. Good to hear. One cool thing, just being out there kind of grilling the burgers, there's just thousands of geese flying overhead. So instead of watching the burgers, I was just looking straight up with my neck aching, looking at thousands and thousands of birds just honking and flying overhead, which was a constant for the entirety of this camp. So even when we weren't in the pits, or the A-frames hunting, there's just always geese, which is super exciting. It was really, really cool. Yeah, so I made so we just had some burgers for lunch and filled everyone up, and then it was butcher time after that.
Yep, it was butcher time. So then everybody took their birds from the last now 2.5 days at this point, and began processing them. In that butchering process, they mimicked kind of what Adam showed in the class the day before. So skinning and then breaking the birds down off the carcass into breast, legs, wings, and then the wobbly bits. Even some folks kept some feet for stock and tongues. Tongues, too. So really trying to utilize the whole animal. And then definitely using the remainder of the carcass and getting those sealed up for stock as well. So it was cool to see everybody like eager to take all the pieces and use all the pieces. So that was exciting. I don't know. Any thoughts to add? It's kind of like that's a good summary of butchering.
Back in Wisconsin, we hunt a lot of Canada geese. And I think, like you said earlier, the majority of the time, all we do is breast them out. And on Thursday night, Adam made some hearts, which shocked me how amazing they were. So that really excited me to break down the bird into all the different parts and how you can kind of turn them into just a immaculate food with something that you might have just thrown in the trash before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good segue into like sort of the hors d'oeuvres and snacks that we've had. Do you want to go through that?
I'll try to remember what we did this weekend because it all kind of blends in. But just like the pig camp, I tried to utilize the entire bird in the food for the camp, so everyone gets to try all the different parts. And I started off when everyone kind of arrived and got settled in with a goose liver pate. Oh, there we go. Some help. Goose liver pate, as well as some maple whiskey goose rillettes, which are basically the legs and wings cooked down for a really long time until they're falling off the bone and then kind of whipped with a wooden spoon. A little bit of goose fat and broth and some local whiskey from our farm and some maple syrup, which was delicious. And then we got some Romanian deviled eggs, which is kind of an old school Romanian recipe with using deviled eggs with the goose liver. So I basically make part of the pate basically with liver, add in some horseradish, some shallot, some parsley, and it's kind of like a really punchy version of a deviled egg. Oh, and then we made some one of Justin's famous recipes. It's kind of like a goose heart yakitori, and we decided to put it on kind of a nigiri style sushi. So basically made some sticky rice and made little rice packets and seared the hearts with a yakitori style sauce and settled that onto the rice so everyone could have a little bite. And then the hosts of the camp that have us here made a big mess of goose poppers, which were incredible.
It seems to be kind of a fan favorite for most of the clients that come through here, but it's just simply breasted out goose or duck or whatever, and then we run it through salt water like you do a lot of game or fish or something, get the blood out of it a little bit for a day or so, and then cut it up in chunks and marinate it. I typically use Cajun Creole butter flavor marinade, and then do that for a couple days, and then just take the bite-sized pieces with a slice of jalapeno, basically a dollop or whatever, cream cheese, and then wrap it in basically a third or a half strip of bacon and put it on the smoker and let it barely cook a little. you know, back to the goose thing, I think a lot of times that if people don't like it, it's overcooked. Mm-hmm, cool. So you want it kind of medium rare to rare. So, yeah, that's how I do that.
While we're here, do you want to introduce yourself and sure. talk about...
I'm not much for talking, but yeah. So I'm Andy Christman, and I own Trophy Wildlife Outfitters. And these great people called me up and wanted to talk about booking a hunt, and I got to finding out what they wanted to do and was very happy to have them. So looking forward to this for future years to come.
So on top of the goose poppers, we did some garlic butter goose steak. So it's basically goose breast cubed up. Showered with Harvest Nature waterfowl blend, which was used in abundance this weekend and worked out really well. Seared just so there's kind of crispy on the outside, rare in the middle, and then tossed in a garlic butter sauce. And kind of the last appetizer style meal is something we're actually all chewing on right now as we pass the mic around, and that is goose gizzards, which were slow cooked overnight until they're super tender. And then country fried, so basically dusted in flour that's heavily seasoned with the waterfowl blend once again, lots of pepper, dipped in egg wash back into the flour, and I took some sage leaves, like a whole bunch of sage leaves, fried them in oil so they're nice and crispy, and then fried the gizzards in the oil as well, and then kind of crumbled the crispy sage leaves over top. So that's going around the table as we're doing the podcast. And yeah, that was the appetizers for the weekend.
My memory of gizzards is like my grandfather getting chicken gizzards from the gas station, and I'll tell you, this does not compare. These are way better. let's see, we kind of jumped around a little bit, but while we were butchering, because it did take a fair amount of time to get through the geese that they had, and some didn't get through all their geese in that session, but we give plenty of time to do the butchering and even offer up services as needed to help. During that, Adam talked a bit about it, some advanced cooking techniques, which we won't necessarily go into. We'll save that. You got to come in person. It's like the behind the scenes tour. But lots of cool things to touch on, like further ways to accentuate waterfowl and just kind of like a good Q&A. So another good thing coming to the camp is like you get, you know, great access to Adam, myself, and then in instances like the pig camp, like Leland and Adam Steele talk about shooting and butchering and ballistics and all the other crazy things that we do there. But like you get firsthand, just kind of touch base with us to sort of pick our brain and ask questions or whatever, beyond sort of like a chat on Instagram or an email or a phone call or anything like that. So it's cool. It's cool for us to be able to just hang out and just talk about stuff that we really care about. And then we went hunting this evening, I think probably very similar to yesterday. So we won't spend, I don't know, kind of similar. So, same process. So we won't spend too much time on it, but cause I want to talk about food and we only have about 10 minutes left. So the very prideful orange team, do you guys, green team. Sorry. All right, green team, do you guys want to talk about what you cooked for dinner tonight?
Yeah, we had an excellent dinner planned by Adam, but we made an agua chili, which is generally made with a seafood such as shrimp, but we used goose breast instead, and it turned out amazing. Something that the two teams did is we actually made the meal under the tutelage of Adam. And I'm not sure that Justin was anywhere in sight at that point.
Whoa. Maybe not tonight. I was helping Kate butcher her goose and making cocktails. Oh, wait, that was after. I was helping her after. I was making cocktails, not for myself, but for everybody else.
Okay, I stand corrected, I guess.
I made potatoes last night.
I will also
not
say,
like not like kids can though.
I think that the green team got more complex and flavorful recipes. So if they think they did a better job, it's all Adam's fault, not your own. So I still say go orange team.
I have to give the orange team kudos because they didn't only grind the meat for their meal, but they ground the meat for the meal the next day as well.
That was very magnanimous of you.
They had a ground meat meal and we had a grilled meal, medium rare. It was very good. They were both very good.
How was it served?
It was served on tostadas with the choice of avocado. They could put whatever the condiment they wanted on it. We had avocado, homemade pickled onion, some radish slices, jalapenos, and cilantro.
And then the sauce. What sauce did you guys use?
Part of the sauce that we used to toss the goose breast in was reserved for putting on top of the tostada,
which was awesome, I think. But agua chile is traditionally served with chips, so we opted for the tostada because tostadas are cool. That was my contribution, by the way. Let's see, and then also too with the soup. You guys want to tell us about the soup? You can talk about the soup. Go ahead.
So for tonight's soup that went along with the agua chili, once again, it was pretty cold outside, so I thought I'd just do a non-matching, non-pairing kind of side dish as a hot soup in case anyone needed it. So at the beginning of the weekend, I had smoked like probably a dozen goose carcasses. So I just had smoked goose carcasses kicking around all weekend, which is perfect. And basically nonstop, I just had a big stock pot full of simmering water full of goose carcasses and making broths and soups. And you can throw the broths into things like the mashed potatoes that we did and other things we ate. And then we had soups to go with it as well. So tonight was more of a Chinese style soup. Basically a broth made with the smoked carcasses and some goose legs and goose wings, which I pulled the meat off of and simmered along with some star anise, a little bit of cinnamon, some cardamom, some oyster sauce, ginger, garlic, and soy sauce. So, and then it was served with some bok choy and lo mein noodles. So it was just kind of like, sounds like a lot of ingredients, but it turned out a pretty simple noodle soup with a kind of a Chinese flavor. And it was kind of nice to go in after, after being outside in the cold all day. So, yeah.
No, it was good. And then we also did a cocktail pairing with this meal as well. I went kind of in line with the meal that we had. So I wanted something both that could go with an Asian-inspired dish and a Latin American-inspired dish. So I chose to make a drink that was created, actually it was created during Prohibition times, but kind of built off of it here. It's called the Orange Blossom. So it used, we used local vodka from our farm as well. It's not like our farm as in we own a farm here. It's like R, the letter R slash farm. It's a local distillery. And so we used their vodka in that, some orange juice, and some Spanish vermouth. So Spanish vermouth is a little different than what you commonly see in the store, which is Italian-style vermouth, which tends to be a little bitter, a little more dry. Spanish vermouth is more, I would say, more smooth and has a lot of aromatics and herbal characteristics to it. So that kind of elevated that drink a bit. And then in order to tie in sort of those flavors to that of sort of like the Latin American inspired part of the meal, I took orange slices and rolled them in tahin, the seasoning, and then garnished the drink with that. And then we had the two wines from Pasalaca Winery that we used. We had a Fiano, which is a white wine, which is really, really good, and then a Valdiguet. Sorry, my mind just blanked for a second. Which was also good. Little, I think we were talking to Tom, sort of like all their wines kind of very buttery up front, and then they kind of open into whatever goes into that composition. I think I tasted it with a Chardonnay, and after you said that, I tasted the red wine from tonight, and yeah, it's like it's there in yeah. different.
It's not a bad buttery. It's actually kind of a nice way to bring it into the rest of the flavors.
Yeah. Some people think of like buttery Chardonnay from California, that's like very popular on the Sonoma Coast, which is where this vineyard is from. So like it definitely like hits on those notes that everyone just goes crazy for.
No, I'm really happy that we had the wine to kind of pair with it. Too often, I don't know how frequently you're going to pair snow goose and wine. So it was cool to see that uniquely done. And yeah, then we just closed out the evening, just kind of like cleaning up, wrapping up butchering and all that stuff, getting ready to depart tomorrow. But as we're kind of running out of time, we can go around the table and get anybody's last thoughts or overall thoughts on what you thought about the camp in general or anything. So who wants to go first?
So first of all, I just want to thank Andy and the team of guides and his wife and his daughters and everyone else who are helping out this weekend and put on a great weekend at Trophy Wildlife Outfitters. It was just a great time, and we all had a really good time. I think you guys really, really made us all happy. So thank you, first of all. and snow goose is not something I was super familiar with. I've done a lot of Canada goose hunting and cooking, but it was just, once again, really cool to see the versatility that a meat like snow goose can be brought out. And there's, I think it has endless opportunities to cook with it. There's so many things you could do with it. And we just scratched the surface here. And I hope everyone can bring that home with them, that, you know, there's lots that can be done with this meat. And all the naysayers out there just don't know what they're talking about, because it's tasty stuff. So, yeah, thank you for the great weekend, and thanks everyone for coming. I had a great time.
I'd just like to thank the guide service here too. I think you guys did a great job. Your guides are great guys as well, and really enjoyed their company. I appreciate Harvesting Nature for putting this on, because we got to meet people that we wouldn't have met otherwise, and other hunters. And I think friendships were probably formed here that will last for a while. It's too bad that those people in Arizona had to go through the cold weather that they did here. But from what I have heard, the people that moved to Arizona figure they're going to hell and they just wanted to acclimate.
It's part of our charm. We earn our way. This amazing thing you have called winter. We're just not familiar with it. But really appreciate the TWO folks, as well as Harvesting Nature crew, as always. I've been to the pig camp, and I think this really makes a really like strong kind of bookend between like the goose camp and the pig camp. You get a sense of really clear direction in terms of like hunting, but more importantly, the butchering and the cooking of obviously like poultry, as well as your four-legged animals. And I think the combination of those two really just builds confidence. So when you go out on a deer hunt, or you name it, if you're quail or dove, you feel like, okay, I like, you know what you're doing. And for someone who I'm, as I mentioned, the adult onset hunter, like having that exposure and that degree of confidence really just opens up new doors for new adventure.
As my dad has got a crazy Charlie horse over here, I will kick over. I just want to first say, like everybody else, thanks to the Harvesting Nature guys. I consider myself an all right cook, but not when it comes to wild game, specifically waterfowl. I usually kick it over my dad because he does a great job. So it was nice to learn a lot of new things, and ways of cooking that I will definitely be taking home. Secondly, I want to thank TWO here. First of all, they're great people. The guides are fantastic, and I've been to a number of places that guide. The guides can be all right, but you may not sit down and just have beer with them, and these are definitely guys you can do that. So would highly suggest both the camp and the outfitter.
As somebody who would describe themselves as a relatively experienced waterfowler, there were certainly many things that I learned this week/weekend that I will definitely be taking back into my regular life of hunting and living and cooking. And like everybody said, props to TWO and the guys here at Harvesting Nature. I mean, everybody put on just a wonderful weekend, and couldn't have had a better experience, really.
I don't even know where to begin to follow up with any of that, but we really do appreciate you guys choosing to come hunt here and teach us how to cook. I was floored from the very first night with the food. I mean, this is just amazing. I've hunted my whole life and thought I knew how to cook what I killed, and my eyes are, I don't know, I'm still blown away. So I'm still kind of looking up, trying to figure out what in the world, because, I mean, as I'm sitting here looking at what little bits left of these gizzards that we tried, I wouldn't typically eat gizzards. Like you said, chicken gizzards, these are very, very tender. But anyway, yeah, I mean, like I said, just simplified. I look forward to many more times of this and whatever else we can put together, because this is amazing. It's a new spin on a completely different direction of what we've done here. So, like I said, there's never too old or too young to learn something new. So look forward to many more times of doing stuff like this.
Mirroring what everyone else has said, just coming from a place of not ever having waterfowl hunted or really shotgun hunted, I definitely felt like I was in good hands with Harvesting Nature and TWO. Yeah, it definitely, as someone who hasn't hunted in a long time, reminded me of this really beautiful symbiosis that we have with the land, especially knowing the conservation elements involved with snow goose hunting specifically. So, yeah, to me that definitely renewed... definitely renewed my interest in pursuing this again.
Thanks, everyone. Those were really kind words. And you know, we do this because we want to spread, you know, the good gospel, I guess, for lack of a better word. No, and I mean, it's something we're all passionate about, right? And I think that passion, as I look at both Andy and Adam, like the passion shows through in their work, and you know, the work of your team, Andy, as well. Like, which I think is such a positive thing, and creating an environment where anybody at any skill level, at any point in their evolution as a hunter or angler, creating that environment where they can feel comfortable to come in and learn to do things, to ask questions, to like try to gain experience in a comfortable way. I think is that's key, and that's kind of what we always try to do in our camps. I mean, that is what we do in our camps. Not what we try. We do that, and I think we'll continue to see these camps evolve and find new ways to do more things with wild game, right? Because I think utilizing wild game and as a food resource is such a great thing. And I think as hunters and anglers, showing the respect to the animal through continuing to positively represent it in food after it's shot, after it's caught, after it's foraged, whatever, is probably the best thing that we can do as humans on the other end of that cycle. So thanks everybody for coming. It's been a fantastic weekend. I'm excited to have met everybody and to get to hang out with some others again. And hope to see you again in another camp. And then, go tell your friends. Just overall, thanks. It means a lot. Because we can't do this without you guys. I'll say out there, everybody, thanks for listening. And whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on, please punch that 5-star button, leave us a review, tell us we're doing right, or, tell us we're doing wrong. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.